Welcome to Sarah's Bookshelves Live. I'm Sarah of the blog Sarah's Bookshelves. Each week, I'm talking with one bookish guest about two old books they love, two new books they love, one book they don't love, and one new release they're excited about. We're going to get real and sometimes a little bit snarky about all things books. This is a brand new podcast, so if you like it, I'd really love your support. Please spread the word to your reader friends, subscribe to the show, and rate and review it wherever you listen to podcasts. Rating, reviewing, and subscribing really helps new listeners find us. All right, let's get rolling. Hey, everyone. This week we have Hannah, otherwise known on Instagram as Book Nerd Native, joining me. I'm so excited to talk to her. She's a fellow Southerner, just like me, and she reads incredibly widely. I'm going to just tick off all the genres she likes to read for you so you can get an appreciation for how widely she likes to read. She loves historical fiction, thrillers, literary fiction, memoirs, and other nonfiction, fantasy and sci-fi, young adult, and new adult. So we're going to be branching out into some areas today where I don't normally go. Welcome, Hannah.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here.
I am thrilled to talk to you. So I know that you just moved, which is one of the most stressful things I feel like in life.
Yes.
Especially for us bookworms.
Yeah, definitely. Moving the books was, it always is a challenge. This is actually the fourth move that my husband and I have gone through, and we've only been married for 4 years. So,
so a move a year.
Yeah, I'm really hoping that this is our last move for a while, because especially moving the books.
Yes.
Is quite a challenge.
And yeah. That's where I was going. Are you somebody that packs up gazillions of boxes of books and has your husband move them? Or are you somebody that takes this opportunity to purge your physical book collection?
I mean, both. But yeah, I purged a lot of books this last move, which was awesome. And it felt really good. And it felt really good to donate a lot of them.
Where did you donate them to?
So I donated most of them to the library, just my local library.
Yep.
I also did a lot of donating just to local thrift stores and stuff like that, especially all of the ARCs that I get that I either will not be reading or I've already read and bought the physical copy of.
Right.
They have to be donated somewhere because they obviously cannot be sold.
Right. And for the listeners out there, ARCs are the advanced copies that bloggers and people that talk about books on Instagram and that we all get in advance of publication from publishers so that we can read them before they come out and have our thoughts and reviews all ready to go when they're finally published. And they cannot be resold, but they are sometimes.
Yeah, you know, I actually see them sometimes in used bookstore sales and stuff. And I'm like,
oh, do you? Oh, interesting.
Hey, that's not supposed to be here.
So let me ask you this. You said you purged a lot of your books when you moved. Did you have a system for deciding which books stayed and which books had to go?
Kind of. I tried the whole, you know, Marie Kondo thing of, does this bring me joy?
Right. I feel like that would take a really long time to do that book by book by book.
Well, yeah. There are just some books like classics and things like that that I really have been wanting and meaning to read for a really long time, but they've been sitting on my shelf for so long. So books like that, even though they've been sitting on my shelf for a long time unread, they really are books that I want to get to eventually. Books like Jane Eyre and right. Even modern classics like The Secret History.
Oh, yes, you need to read that.
I know. So even though they've been sitting on my shelf for a couple of years, I do know I'm going to read them eventually. Right. So I didn't purge those.
They will eventually bring you joy.
They will. They will. Exactly.
So Marie Kondo should be okay with it.
Oh, man. The fact that she said 30 books max, I mean, that's just not doable.
Yeah. I have a very minimalist book collection, and I think it's more than 30. That's for sure.
Yeah. And I know that you have mentioned on your podcast that you read basically strictly ebooks.
Yes, I do.
You know, the fact that you have over 30 books, I don't know what that says for the rest of us who read mostly physical copies.
Well, I didn't always read ebooks. I had to be kind of dragged kicking and screaming into the ebook world. And then once I got there, I was like, oh, I'm never going back. My husband and I were about to go on a trip and he essentially was like, you're not packing 5 books.
you either travel with no books or you're going to get this e-reader thing, which was kind of new at the time. And I was like, fine, I'll try it. And I did it for the trip and I have not been unable to go back.
They really are convenient for a lot of reasons. First of all, you know, you can carry hundreds of books in right. one device. And also, I know as a mom, I have been utilizing my e-reader a lot more just yeah. because, especially when she was really little, she would be in a bassinet next to our bed and my husband would be sleeping next to me, but I wouldn't be ready to go to bed. Like, I want some time for myself and I want to read.
Sure.
So it was nice to be able to be in a dark room with the baby sleeping and my husband sleeping, but still be able to read.
Right. The backlight.
Yes.
So when I moved about a year and a half ago, and I think I might be the only bookworm out there that had to add to their book collection when they moved.
Yeah, you might be.
In our new house, I had these beautiful built-in bookshelves. We had previously lived in New York City, so I had no space and kept not that many books.
Oh, yeah.
And I had no pretty hardcovers. So I basically tried to buy a bunch of my all-time favorite books in hardcover to sit on my bookshelves.
That's such a good idea, though. And that's one of the perks also, I feel like, of e-readers and also using your digital library, because you can listen to digital books.
Yes.
You can also get e-books from your library. But then if you like them, then you can purchase them in hardcover. So it's kind of nice already knowing you like a book before adding it to your collection.
I totally agree. And that's kind of the only way I buy books anymore, if I've already read them.
Which guarantees that every book in your library is going to be something that, you know, you can either pass on to a friend or have a child read, or you can Right. reread in the future.
Absolutely. All right. Let's talk a little bit about your reading taste. Is there anything you do not read?
So in terms of genre, not really. I just really like a good story. And I think that most genres can provide that.
Sure.
There are certain things in certain genres that I don't like. For example, in terms of sci-fi, now I don't read a lot of science fiction, but I have read science fiction that I've really loved. Like
right.
Dark Matter. Yes. I really loved that book.
I did love that one too.
And I think that was considered in the sci-fi genre. However,
yes. But crossover, I feel like it had crossover appeal to people that don't normally read.
Totally.
Genre.
Like a thriller or.
Yes.
Definitely some crossover there. But in terms of science fiction, I'm never going to read a space odyssey. Like, that just doesn't appeal to me.
Right. Me neither.
Yeah, exactly. So there are just certain, not necessarily tropes, but like certain types of genres that I don't gravitate towards. But I feel like a lot of times genres are so broad in and of themselves that there's probably going to be a book in any genre that would appeal to me.
That's a really good way to look at it.
Yeah.
I should probably be more open-minded like you.
Well, it makes reading a lot more fun, that's for sure.
Absolutely. So you have three big reading goals for this year. Can you tell everybody what they are?
Yeah. So I really wanted to read more nonfiction. What really inspired me to read more was actually listening to Tracy from the Stacks Pod.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, she was recently on Ann Vogel's podcast. And
yep, I listened to that episode. And I'll link to that in the show notes for everybody as well.
It just got me really excited to read more nonfiction because the books that she talked about it just sounded so fascinating. And I love history, and what better way to learn about the really important things in our history than through nonfiction.
Sure.
And I also, for a long time, just told myself I really didn't like nonfiction. But then my husband pointed out to me that every single time I read a memoir, I always end up crying afterward and saying it was like my favorite book ever. So
I feel like memoirs especially can do that to you.
Yes. So I was pretty wrecked after the last couple of memoirs that I read.
And I think you're going to share one of those today, right?
Yes, actually a couple of them.
Oh, good. Okay. So I won't ask you about them right now.
And so my other two is just to read more women, and specifically women of color.
And how did you decide on your second two goals?
I mean, reading more women, I think, is kind of a no-brainer for me.
Right.
I mostly read women anyway, and I just think that it is important to honor the fact that women over the last, you know, so many years have been honored and recognized more as writers. Also, women of color. I read a lot of women last year, but I think only like 25 to 35% of my reading was diverse in some right. way, specifically people of color. And so I really wanted to make that more of a priority this year. And I've really been happy that I have so far because they've been some of my favorite books.
Yes. And you also, again, you're going to share at least one of those later, I think.
Yes.
And so how have you been doing with these goals? Do you feel like you've actually been reading more women, people of color, and nonfiction than last year?
Yeah, definitely. And it's been, I think, because, you know, I have a public platform and these goals yeah. have been kind of public knowledge. I've been getting a lot more diverse books sent, you know, from publishers yes. and have just been sent my way. And it's just been a really awesome experience.
And making a goal public, there's nothing more motivating than that, at least for me.
Yes.
I feel like if I put it out there and I don't do it, then that's like a really motivating force for me.
It is. I recently started putting on my Instagram stories when I had a page count goal for the evening.
Oh.
Yeah, but it's really helped. Like, oh, well, I told everybody I was going to read 100 pages today, so I got to get to at least 75.
How many pages in one evening do you normally read?
It's been like about 30 lately.
Yeah.
But before...
Well, you have a 13-month-old baby, so you can be forgiven.
Who's teething?
Oh, yeah, that's not fun.
No, and we just moved a couple weeks ago, so I've been trying to give myself a little grace. But before, when I was reading, I mean, I read 10 books in January, and I was reading probably about 100 pages a day, at least, when I was doing that.
This is interesting. I can't even remember where I heard this, and it might be an old wives' tale, but I heard somewhere that the number of pages you read in a day, as a rule of thumb, is going to be the number of books you read in a year.
Oh, that is interesting.
Is that accurate for you?
That kind of makes sense for me. Yeah. Yeah, it does.
I remember when I heard it, it was maybe a year or two ago, and I remember it was accurate for me that particular year.
Yeah, because I know last year, I'm thinking about my reading habits last year, I read around 60 books. And I think that my average page count a day last year was around like 53 or 55 pages a day. And I read like 60 books. So that's pretty close.
That is pretty close. So there you have it, y'all. If you want to read a certain number of books a year, the way that you break it down is to target that same number of pages per day.
There you go.
There we go. All right. On that note, let's get on to your book recommendations.
Yes, I'm so excited.
Let me just refresh everybody or let everybody know how this will work for any new listeners out there. Hannah is going to share two old books she loves, two new books she loves, one book she doesn't love, and one upcoming release that she's excited about. Let's talk about your first old book.
The first book that I'm going to talk about is Girls Burn Brighter by Shoba Rayo.
Yep.
Girls Burn Brighter follows two young girls. It starts in the beginning with Purnima and Savitha, who are both poor Indian girls. And Savitha comes into Purnima's home to kind of help out around their house. Purnima's mother recently passed away or was not there at the time anymore. And so Savitha kind of comes to help out in their mother's absence. And they develop a really strong friendship during this time. And so the beginning of the book, you're following these two young girls as their friendship starts to blossom. And then throughout the story, they grow up and Purnima is taken away to be married. And in this time, Savitha gets sent off to the States. And basically, the rest of the novel is them trying to find one another. And you're following each of their perspectives. It kind of bounces back and forth. Their friendship was just so beautiful. And the things that they had to go through to attempt to find one another was just heartbreaking and amazing and just such an epic story. The fact that both of these characters were poor, they had huge ambitious dreams, and they were women, which...
Right, in that culture.
Yeah, it wasn't a good mix, but I felt like, although it was a heartbreaking story, it had so many redeeming and hopeful qualities, which is something I love.
Right.
I don't necessarily want my heartbreak in my stories to come without a little splash of hope and redemption. And I felt like this book had all three of those things.
I heard this one was pretty brutal. Like, there is some parts that are very tough to read, right? Is that right?
Yeah, definitely trigger warning for spousal abuse.
Yeah.
And in general, if you don't like reading about really, really difficult and graphic,
right,
definitely would want to avoid this one if that was something that was really difficult for you to read.
Yeah. So that was Girls Burn Brighter by Shobha Rao.
Yes.
And that came out last March. And I actually did pick up this book. I wouldn't even call it a DNF. It was more of just a sample. I didn't make it that far, but I also was kind of in the mood for summer books for my summer reading guide, was what I was sort of looking for. And I knew this was not going to fit that bill.
It definitely doesn't.
No.
No, it definitely doesn't.
No. All right. So let's hear about your next old book you loved.
This one is a memoir. It's called In Order to Live by Yanmi Park.
Yep.
Have you read this one?
I have not, but I've read some other memoirs that are kind of similar topic, which I'll let you tell everybody what it's about, and then we can talk about this.
Yeah. So this follows a young girl, Yanmi Park. She's from North Korea, and it is her journey from childhood into young adulthood, escaping North Korea. And the beginning of the book just talks a lot about what it was like for her to live in North Korea as a young child. So her day-to-day, what school was like, the fact that they weren't allowed to watch anything on television if it wasn't some kind of propaganda, and just the really strict regime that was North Korea.
Yeah.
Eventually, she and her mother undergo some pretty serious trauma in order to escape. She has a younger sister as well, and a father who gets into some trouble with the law at some point, and they kind of all get separated. Eventually, though, she is, and this is not a spoiler at all, it talks about on the cover of the book that it's her escape from North Korea. So eventually, right, at the end of the book, you find out, you know, how she was able to finally escape.
Sure.
It's not a terribly long book. I think it was only 200 or so pages, but it was definitely not a fast or an easy read, as you can imagine. I actually listened to this on audio, but it was one of those books where I had to listen to maybe like 20 minutes at a time.
Yeah.
The things that she just experienced in her journey to escape were very challenging and traumatic.
Yeah. Question about this one. What class was she in North Korea? Was she lower class, or was she somehow involved with the government?
No, they weren't involved with the government. They were very poor.
Okay.
And it definitely talks about how, you know, there were days when they wouldn't eat for a couple of days, and, you know, work was really hard to come by for her father. And so that definitely adds to, obviously, their hardship that they experienced while living in North Korea.
Totally. So I read another memoir that's kind of similar, but a little different. It's called Without You, There Is No Us by Suki Kim.
I think I've heard of that one, but I haven't read it.
I feel like there's been this trend, and actually it was more a couple years ago that this was a trend of North Korea memoirs coming out.
Yeah.
And this was one of them. And she was an American journalist and went over to teach at a North Korean school for sons of the elite.
Okay.
So that's why I asked you about the class, like what class was she?
Yeah.
Because this other memoir I read was talking about the lives of the elite, and they were awful. I can't even imagine what the lives of the lower class were like.
I want to read that then, because that would be such an interesting comparison.
Totally. And I want to read In Order to Live now, because that, again, same thing. I wondered when I was reading Without You, There Is No Us, I wondered the entire time. They would see these peasants on the side of the road out the bus window, but we never learned much about them.
Yeah.
And I just feel like North Korea is this black box, and you don't quite know what goes on over there.
Oh, you can't.
No. And I'm so fascinated by anything that comes out of there, because it's like they're living 60 years behind everybody else almost.
Yeah. And she talks about that a lot in her story. And also I've watched a lot of interviews with Yanmi Park since then and a lot of her speeches that she's done. And right. she's really, really passionate about finally freeing North Korea, which is really cool. But she is unique to listen to because North Korea is so sheltered from everyone else and right. everyone else is so sheltered from them that not a lot of people even really fully understand what the government looks like, what it's like to be there because they want it that way.
Right. And even like these elite kids I was reading about, like they didn't know what jeans were.
Ugh, that's crazy.
They didn't know access to the internet.
No.
Whatever the government does not feed them, they don't know about.
No, they don't. And of course, they don't have access to internet because that would mean that they have access to the outside world.
Absolutely.
North Korea doesn't want their people to have access to anything except for North Korean propaganda.
All right. Well, those are two hefty books right there.
Yeah, they're heavy. I guess that's a little bit of a theme of mine.
And I should say that, and I probably should have said this earlier before you started your recommendations, but the books you're sharing today are all falling within one of your three reading goals. So
yeah.
Nonfiction by women or women of color.
Yes.
All right. Let's talk about the first new book you loved.
So the first new book I loved, I actually just finished a couple of days ago, and it was The Care and Feeding of Ravenously Hungry Girls by Anissa Gray. And I believe you've read this one as well.
I have read this one. I want to hear your thoughts first, and then I will share mine.
The Care and Feeding of Ravenously Hungry Girls follows a family of mostly women, the Butler family, and it follows Althea, Viola, and Lillian. And they are sisters. And Althea, who is the oldest sister, she's kind of been a mother to her family because they had a very broken family growing up. And the oldest sister ends up getting sent to prison with her husband. And they used to be a very respected family in town. And now they've kind of turned into a disgrace amongst their community because their eldest sister, Althea, is sent to prison and her sisters don't really know exactly what happened.
And I felt like that was a big suspenseful element of the beginning of the book because I wanted to know what happened and the reader doesn't quite understand what happened. I mean, you do get somewhat of an idea, but it's never fully delved into in detail, I didn't feel like.
No, it was so vague for most of the book. And for a while, I was like, am I not supposed to know what's happening? Because I don't know what's happening.
In the community, they immediately sort of treated them like pariahs because their crimes did really impact the community.
It did.
I'm not going to say what the crimes are. Yeah, I don't want to spoil it for anybody.
But yeah, so, you know, the sisters, I think they were kind of, I don't want to say like estranged, but, you know, one of the sisters, I believe she's the youngest sister, Viola. And so she has to come in to town to stay with her older sister, Lillian. And the two of them have to take up the responsibility of caring for Althea's teenage daughters. So there's a lot going on in this household during the book.
Yep.
And I know you didn't like this book.
No, I did. I did like it. I'll elaborate more on that in a minute, but
I meant you didn't like the book that I was going to compare it to.
Oh, just kidding. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say it kind of gave me Little Fires Everywhere.
No, I did like Little Fires Everywhere.
Oh, you did?
One of my guests on a previous podcast did not.
Okay, that must have been what I was thinking.
I didn't love it. It wasn't 5 stars for me, but it was 4 stars.
Okay. So it kind of reminded me a little bit of that with all of the family dynamics.
Sibling dynamics.
Yes, exactly. A little bit of like the suspense, but it's also like a family drama.
I feel like the suspense is secondary.
Exactly.
This is more of a family drama than it is suspense.
For sure. But there's still that like underlying, okay, what's going to happen?
Totally.
Or what is happening?
Right.
So yeah, I absolutely adored this book.
So this book has been compared to The Mothers by Britt Bennett, which I adored, and An American Marriage by Tayari Jones, which I'm sure everybody's heard of from last year.
Yes, and I haven't read either of those books.
Oh, my Lord. Oh, you have to read both. Yes. So I adored both of those. So like this one had such high expectations, or I had such high expectations for it. A, because of those comparisons, and B, because I peeked at the first few pages. I was preparing to do our winter 2019 podcast preview show.
Right.
And the writing right out of the gates, I was like, oh my gosh, this is my kind of writing. And so I was so excited about this book. So I liked it. But I kept waiting to be blown away.
Yeah.
And I was like, I like it, but I'm not being blown away. And I had all these expectations of being blown away. I think that if I had gone in with regular sized expectations, I would have been like, oh my gosh, I really liked that book. Instead of, oh, it was a little bit of a letdown, even though I really liked it. I will read whatever she writes next.
Oh, same.
So that was The Care and Feeding of Ravenously Hungry Girls by Nyssa Gray. And that just came out a week or so ago, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah, it's brand new.
Brand new. All right. So what is the second new book you loved?
So I really had a hard time coming up with this one. And so this book isn't incredibly new. It came out within the last, I think, 13 months. And that is Educated by Tara Westover.
Yep.
This book was so hyped.
So hyped.
I think on every platform. And so I almost didn't want to talk about it because I was like, well, everybody's read this book or has at least heard of it.
However, I've gotten feedback from listeners that they like hearing about books that they've heard of and or read on the podcast. I don't think it's wrong that you're talking about it.
Well, perfect, because I loved this book. And I know it's been compared a lot to The Glass Castle.
Yeah.
Which I think is accurate. I would say I like Educated a little better in that I feel like Educated was, pun I guess not intended, educational. It's essentially about a young woman, Tara Westover, who grew up in a Mormon religious, it was a religious extremist Mormon household.
And also survivalist.
Yes.
Like they're living off the grid. Which I don't think is part of the religion. I could be wrong about that, actually.
No, it's not. So, fun fact, I actually used to be a part of the Mormon church.
Did you really? Oh my gosh. Okay, so I'm now fascinated in your thoughts on this book.
So I found this book absolutely fascinating. I am no longer a practicing Mormon by any stretch of the imagination.
Why did you leave?
Yes, I did. I did leave the church, but, and this was part of why I actually love Tara just as a person. I've listened to countless interviews with her after reading her book, and she says about Mormonism and Mormons in general, how I feel. I have very warm feelings toward them, and she says the same, which for her is a lot heavier of a statement considering what she went through.
Right. But also, her dad probably was not your average Mormon.
No, not at all. And right. I think that was helpful going into the book, knowing that, like, oh, this isn't your normal Mormon lifestyle. But I really appreciated that Tara talks about that at the very beginning of the book. And in fact, I think she has like an author's note at the very beginning that states, you know, I just want everybody to know that this book in no way, shape, or form is a whole example of, you know, religion or anything like that. This was just my personal experience with my family, and it's completely insular in that way.
Right.
I applaud her for saying that because it is true. Obviously, this was not your typical Mormon family, and that had to do with the fact that they were survivalists.
Right.
So they didn't believe in modern medicine. They didn't believe in educating their children through the public school system.
Or any school system at all.
Yeah. And in fact, you know, they were, hand quotes, homeschooled, but that meant just working in their father's junkyard.
Right.
And so because they worked in this junkyard all day, Tara and her siblings, and she had, I don't remember exactly how many, but it was like six siblings or something like that. She had quite a few.
Yeah, it was a lot. And I feel like there were a number of brothers.
Yes, there were quite a few brothers. She just had one sister, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, I think she just had one sister. But anyway, she had quite a few brothers. And because they all worked with their dad at the scrapyard, at their junkyard, a lot of injuries happened. And I know a lot of people complained, like I read so many reviews on Amazon and stuff where people were like, there's no way that many things could have happened to this family. And it's like, well, they worked at a junkyard and didn't believe in modern medicine. So it sounds perfectly reasonable to me.
But they were also like engaging in behavior and like making decisions that put themselves at risk for these things to happen. You know what I mean? Like the dad was getting them to do things that most rational humans wouldn't do.
Absolutely. He would have them like hop into the, what do you call it? You know, like those, the diggers.
Oh, the excavators.
The excavators. I call it a digger. You can tell I live with a toddler.
I used to call it the big digger.
Okay. Okay. So I'm not the only one.
And now I've learned it's an excavator because there is one sitting in my backyard at the moment because we're doing some yard things. But
oh, fun.
That's neither here nor there.
Yeah. So he has her get into an excavator, right? At one point. He was trying to like dump something and she had to like jump out of it before he dumped it.
And we should probably specify that by get into the excavator, we don't mean into the cab where you drive the excavator.
No,
into the digger. We mean like into the shovel part. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, that's what I'm saying. Like, duh, accidents are going to happen because most rational humans don't ride around in the shovel part of an excavator.
No. And she fell. They were basically just like slap a Band-Aid on it. Here's some herbal medicine and we hope you get better. But I think that this book is honestly less about religious extremism and survivalist life and more about how her journey to education, because the first half of the book is just her life at home. And then the second half of the book is kind of how she ended up making it to college.
Yep. And her struggles with her family with making that decision and how they accepted it or not.
Yeah. And so I really think that the book is about just the freedom that she found in education from a specific member of her family who was abusive towards her.
Yep.
And it was really a story about escaping abuse and discovering who you are and finding justice and forgiveness and just being able to separate yourself from your family. And what does it mean to love your family? But also, what does it mean to have enough love and respect for yourself to be able to create the boundaries that you need to with abusive family members? And just how education kind of brought that to light for her and saved her, essentially.
What you just said, I feel like I have never heard this book described in such a concise, like perfect way.
Well, I think that is high praise.
I'm so glad you said it on my podcast. All right. So that was Educated by Tara Westover. I'm sure a lot of you have read it. If you haven't, I do personally think this is a great gateway book to nonfiction. If you don't read a lot of nonfiction and would like to try, I think this is one of those good starter books.
Oh, absolutely.
Let's talk about one book you did not love.
This is a pretty unpopular opinion.
That's okay. I love it when this particular category is an unpopular opinion.
Okay, good. Now, before I say this too, this is going to make it sound like I like all these really deep, dark, and heavy books and don't like light contemporary romantic reads. That is not true. This just happened to be a romantic contemporary, a book that I just did not work for me. And that was One Day in December by Josie Silver.
Yep.
So this is essentially about two people. And again, I didn't really like this book, so I don't remember what their names were. But it follows a female protagonist.
Well, one was busboy for half the book.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. So she basically like sees this guy on a bus and kind of develops this fantasy about him and just has this massive crush on this guy that she just saw at the bus at one point.
Okay, so the girl's name is Lori, and
okay,
bus boy, his name is Jack. I couldn't remember the names either. I just looked them up.
Okay, perfect. So this is pretty early on in the book, so I don't consider this a spoiler, but essentially she meets Jack, and he happens to be dating her best friend and roommate.
I think that's in the blurb of the book, I'm pretty sure.
Perfect. So he is dating her best friend. Before she even knows they're dating, her roommate is like, hey, I really want you to meet my boyfriend. Well, boyfriend happens to be busboy. So that's kind of how the book starts. And you kind of know at the beginning, like, he had eyes for her too, and he saw her too on the bus that day. But then they don't communicate that to each other at all throughout the beginning of the book, which is so frustrating.
I got frustrated with that too.
Oh, I feel like that's my biggest pet peeve in books is when, like, this could be handled with a very simple conversation. And in real life, you would have had this conversation. So,
<Yep. laughs> but that doesn't drive the plot forward.
The communication issue was a huge thing for me that just really frustrated me. But I felt like that it romanticized emotional infidelity a little bit. And that just really bothered me.
You're right. It did. I mean, I read this book too, and this book contained so many things that normally drive me crazy in my reading, a love triangle being one of them.
Oh, right.
But I actually really enjoyed reading it. I think I just was in a mental headspace where I wanted something light and easy, and this was easy to get into. And even though there were all these things about it that I could tick off on my hands that normally drive me crazy, I just enjoyed it anyway. I don't know why.
And I think that we all have things like that. Like,
yeah,
I know that there are probably other books that I have read and enjoyed that also maybe romanticize emotional infidelity or whatever. I think that we all have books where, like, if we happen to read them at the right time, maybe these certain things that normally bother me don't bother me. But this was just not the right time, I think, for me to read this book.
So that was One Day in December by Josie Silver. And let's talk about one upcoming release you're excited about.
I actually was originally going to talk about The Girl He Used to Know by Tracy Garvis Graves, but that was like recently really talked about in a podcast episode with Ashley. Is that her name?
Yes. Ashley Spivey said that she was super excited about it. And actually, I think she'd already read it.
Yeah, I've already read it too.
Okay.
So I'm just going to co-sign that really quick.
Okay, awesome.
And not say anything else about it. So good. It's coming out in April. But the one that I'm going to talk about today is Queenie, and that's by Candace Cardi Williams. And this one comes out in March. I have not read this one yet.
But it is a Book of the Month Club selection for March.
Is it? Oh, perfect.
It is. Yes. Lots of people will have it in their hands very soon, I think. And judging from my Instagram, I think a lot of people are picking this one.
Well, I think that it's going to be a great pick because it's been marketed as Bridget Jones' Diary meets Americana, which I think just sounds really fun, but also really poignant and interesting. It's essentially about a Jamaican British woman. She lives in the UK. She is just kind of in between two cultures because she's Jamaican. She lives in London. And she, I guess, works for a national newspaper where she is just constantly having to juggle the comparison between her and her middle class peers that she works with. And she's just had a messy breakup from a long-term boyfriend who was white. And she's just kind of trying to seek comfort and self-care, I think, in all of the wrong places.
She's making a lot of bad decisions.
She's making a lot of bad decisions.
But you know what? I mean, we've all been there. I have.
Absolutely. And I think that's what seems so appealing about this book is I'm like, okay, so this girl has constantly trying to juggle straddling two cultures. She also works with a bunch of white middle-class people. And she also just broke up with her white boyfriend. I think that it's going to be a completely relatable book. And after she goes from one, I think the back of the book says, as she goes from like one questionable decision to another, she kind of is asking herself, what are you doing? Which I think is also another question that everybody, especially like people that are, I mean, my age, like 25, 26, are asking themselves, like, who am I? What am I doing? Why am I doing it? Who do I want to be? Those are like those huge life questions.
Right. The quarter life crisis questions.
Absolutely. And I think it's going to be fun. I'm hoping it's going to be kind of funny. I also think it's going to be really poignant. And obviously, it's following a Jamaican British woman. So I think that in terms of people in the Black community, I think are really going to relate and find a lot out of this book. It checks a lot of boxes. And I think it's going to be great for a lot of different people.
I agree. And I do like the mix of serious topics and poignancy with sort of a light and funny style.
Totally. I think it's a perfect mix.
So that was Queenie by Candace Cardi Williams, and that's coming out March 19th. But if you're a Book of the Month member, actually, by the time this episode airs, this will be long gone. Never mind. While we're recording it, you have a few days to choose it as your Book of the Month, but this will be long gone by the time you're actually hearing the episode.
Does Book of the Month still do that thing where you can add on a book from previous months?
Yes.
So you can add it on.
Yep. Get a good deal on a nice hardcover.
Yep.
And I should probably also say I'm an affiliate for Book of the Month, but I also pay for my own subscription. All right. We are going to finish the episode as we do every week, and that's by playing Rate It. And this is a lightning round game where I throw out five bookish things, could be anything book related, and you rate it either 1 or 5 stars, but you cannot use 2, 3, or 4 stars.
I think this has been what I've been the most nervous about the whole show.
It's all just your opinion. It's like first thing that comes to mind.
Oh, but making decisions. Oh, that's hard. Okay.
All right. Number one, since you're reading more nonfiction this year, what I like to call life improvement books, which most people call self-help, but I hate that term.
One.
Okay, why not?
Well, I like Brené Brown, but that's like kind of it.
Okay, fair enough.
So I tried reading that book, Option B.
Yes.
I tried reading that one book that has a ton of profanity in it about the F word. Do you know what I'm talking about? The Subtle Art.
The life-changing magic of not giving an F?
Yes, exactly. So I tried reading that one, didn't like it.
All right, number two, what I like to call badass lady books.
Oh, 5.
Yes, me too. I love this.
Obviously. I feel like that's a no-brainer.
Oh, yeah. Fiction and nonfiction. Okay, celebrity memoirs.
1.
Ooh.
I know. I have not read that many, though. So I've read Amy Poehler's book.
Yep.
I've read Bossy Pants by Tina Fey.
Yep. Did you like those?
I thought they were okay.
Yeah, I did too. They were fine.
I think just anything, even if it's not necessarily a memoir, if it's like written by a celebrity, I think I just automatically have this opinion beforehand.
Right.
That, I don't know, it makes it hard for me. It's the same with YouTube celebrities when they come out with books and stuff like that.
Yep. Like Hank Green.
Yeah. I'm automatically kind of like, no thanks.
You almost know too much about the person going in.
Exactly.
I see that. All right. Number 4, reading multiple nonfiction books back to back.
Ooh, 1.
Yep. I think I'm with you on that.
And I think it's because I read mostly pretty heavy nonfiction. I read Educated earlier this year. I am now reading The Warmth of Other Suns, which I'm listening to. It's a long one. And it's also pretty heavy. I think that just because of the nature of the kind of nonfiction that I read, I don't know if I would be able to like emotionally handle reading them back to back.
Yeah. All right. Number 5. This is going to be a long one.
Okay.
Books by an author with a pen name that many assume to be a woman, but then you find out is actually a man. So, for example.
I know exactly what you're talking
yeah.
about.
Yeah, hang with me on this one. For example, Riley Sager and AJ Finn.
Oh, I think 1.
Me too.
I think it's manipulative.
I can kind of see why AJ Finn used a pen name because he works in the industry and
yeah,
there's a little conflict there. I see. Also, apparently he's a Looney Tune. So maybe
Read all that. Oh,
this is a fun fact. I was just hearing about all this drama and my cousin's husband sent me a text message and was like, oh my gosh, have you heard about this guy, Dan Mallory? And he sent me the New Yorker article. And I was like, yes. Oh my gosh. It's really big in the book world right now. He's like, did you know he went to school with us in middle school for 3 years?
What? That's yes. crazy.
I didn't know him. So my cousin's husband, the one who texted me, he was a year behind me. And I went to an all-girls school and they went to an all-boys school, but we were like brother-sister schools. So he remembers him. And he's like, wow. He was not good friends with him or anything. But yeah, he totally remembers him. I don't remember him at all. Yeah, he went to our school for a hot minute.
It never ceases to amaze me, especially being in social media, how small this world is.
Totally.
It's crazy.
I will be interested to see. He has been a Book of the Month Club judge twice recently.
Yes.
Woman in the Window was a Book of the Month Club pick back when it came out. And I think he has another book coming out. Is that right?
I am actually not sure about that. I think that sounds right.
I think he does. I will be interested to see, A, how the second book does, given everything that's come out about him.
Me too.
And B, if Book of the Month Club continues their what seems to be some sort of partnership with him.
Yeah, I'll be curious about all of that too. Definitely.
We will have to stay tuned, and I will link to the New Yorker article that we're talking about in the show notes. And y'all, it's long.
It is really long, but it is worth it. It's so interesting.
This guy's like the talented Mr. Ripley, but real.
If you like reading true crime.
Yeah, it kind of is true crime a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
All right. So before we go, tell everybody where they can find you online.
I am mainly on Instagram, and you can find me by the handle BookNerdNative. And I don't really do Twitter or anything like that. So really, you can just find me on Instagram if you want to shoot me an email or anything like that. It's BookNerdNative@gmail.com.
Great. Well, thank you so much for coming. I've totally enjoyed this conversation.
Oh, me too. It was so much fun. Thank you so much for having me.
Next week, we have our second special episode of the year. Catherine from Gilmore Guide to Books, who joined me for our winter 2019 book preview episode way back in episode 2, is coming back, and we are going to do our spring book preview. And that will cover all the books coming out. The books that we're excited about that are coming out in April and May. Talk to you next week. Thanks so much for listening to Sarah's Bookshelves Live. You can find show notes with all the books mentioned in the episode, purchase links, and linked timestamps at sarahsbookshelves.com/podcast. And that's Sarah with an H. I'd love to hear your comments, feedback, and suggestions, especially since we're just starting out. Find me online on my blog, sarahsbookshelves.com, on Twitter at Sarah's Shelves, on Instagram at Sarah's Bookshelves, and via email at sarahsbookshelves@gmail.com. Happy reading!